beginning next Sunday with Paul Faulkner. You've got a great week in store. If you've never heard Paul, you've got a shock in store. A good shock. He's a great man, and we're very fortunate to have him with us. Don't forget, resident members, be sure to sign up for having your picture made. Do that as soon as you can, please. Tonight at 7:30 till about 10 or so, we're going to have a skating party for all newcomers who are, well, freshmen or transfers or whatever. It'll be out at Skateland. That's the farthest skating rink out near the Y, not just at the interstate, but on out past the interstate at the Y. And we always have a great time. I'm the host of that, and you're invited to be, and Doyle Rainwater and some others, but we've got the thing well in hand, and we're looking for all those of you that like to skate. And if you don't know how to skate, we've got people out there that'll teach you. And we've got doctors standing nearby, and everything's ready. So that's tonight at 7:30. There'll be a bus leaving from the American Heritage Building about 7:15. So if you need transportation, the bus is there. It's about $1 a piece for skating. You're provided with the skates and all, and it's a great time to kind of break some ice and get to know each other. We'll look for you there tonight. The marriage encounter this weekend, Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. There are those of you, and Louine and I are going, there are those of you who ought also to bless your marriage by going. If you don't have finances sufficient, it costs about $100. If you do not have the finances sufficient to do it, please see Dean or Lana Baucom and see them anyway, but sign up with Dean and Lana for that weekend. It's going to be a great one. We're urging you to go. I'm going to have to move on. Would you follow with me real closely and let me just say something once? Somebody reminded me that I reviewed the thing last Sunday twice, so I'm not going to review it today at all, I don't think. I'm going to say what I'm going to say one time because we don't have all that much time. We've got a problem, and that's the subject for the lesson this morning. There are a lot of problems in the world. I don't know of a time when there have been so many problems. Well, they say, well, you don't know anything about it. Well, I do know this. There never has been a time when there have been so many people. And that ought to be sufficient reason to say that there never has been a time when there have been so many problems, because most of the people in the world don't have the answers. They've got the problem. And there's problems in the Middle East. There are problems with Soviet aggression. There's problems with energy shortage, pollution, cancer, divorce, famine, flooding, inflation, recession, unemployment, you name it, we've got it. Most of us find ourselves fairly remote from most of these problems, or the problems are remote from most of us. Even the energy shortage doesn't seem to be all that pressing right now. What really concerns a lot of us is how to get 3 students clothed into 2 closets. That's the biggest problem that some of us think we have. Like the younger brother of one of the famous singers. I was in his home one day, and his wife had just had a miscarriage. She was about 16 years old. She stood there as white as a ghost, and he came out with a long face and said to me, boy, I've got a real problem. And I thought, well, that's quite wisdom, you know, to be on the part of a 17-year-old boy. I said, yes, what is it? He said, the electrical fuel pump on my car has gone out. And I looked at him like I had seen a ghost. There she stood, nearly dead, and there he was worried about his electrical fuel pump. Well, there are some legitimate problems that are going to confront us this year. They don't make the headlines like other problems do, but they're nonetheless legitimate, and we're going to have to face them. Problems of loneliness will face this community, not just students, adults as well. Problems of, just attitude problems in general. Problems of unfriendliness, and you wouldn't think that would exist here, but it does. There are problems of theft, cheating, sexual immorality, drugs, tardiness, uncleanness. These are problems which will mar our year together. And they will spoil relationships, and if they're allowed to continue through your life, they'll spoil your life relationships, and they'll mar your whole life if these problems are not met and dealt with. I want to ask you a question, very simple. Are you a part of the problem or a part of the answer? Now, everybody in this room is one or the other. You're either a part of the problem or a part of the answer. Let me tell you a story. One time, long time ago, Samuel, the prophet, died. 1 Samuel 28 tells about it, but let me just tell you the story briefly, and you can read it later. Samuel had died. Saul was in the lone position of leadership. The Philistines had gathered at, Shunem for war. Saul gathered all of Israel at Gilboa. And there the two armies eyeballed each other. Saul looked over and saw the Philistines, and he panicked. Now, something had happened. He had just prior to this put all the mediums and wizards out of the country because God had decreed that no ones of these people should ever be in the country. No mediums, no wizards, no astrologers, none of these should be in the country. Saul, it says in verse 3, had put them out of the country. And then there came this crisis, the war. He saw the size of the Philistine army. And in verses 3 and 5, it says, when Saul saw the Philistines, he panicked. Verse 5 says that when he went to the Lord for an answer, he didn't get it. And then about verse 6 says, and Saul told his servants, seek out for me a woman who's a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her. Now, that story I told just very briefly in order to show you how people become parts of an answer or the problem rather than an answer. The problem was created by Saul's attitude. Something happened here. Something which we cannot defend and something which I want us to look at, which if translated into your life, will help you see how you are caught up in the process of becoming a part of the problem rather than being a part of the answer. But I don't want us to see that. I want us to see the reverse of it, the flip side. I want you to see how you can become a part of the answer rather than being a part of the problem. Because let's face it, we're going to have problems on this campus and in this community this year. There are too many new teachers in the campus this year for there not to be problems. I'm serious. Some of these new teachers, McElvain, he's going to be a problem. And he's going to have problems because he's going to have a lot of you in class. And we've got a lot of new members. We're going to have problems. Now, how do we get over being a problem and start being an answer? Well, when you translate what Saul did into our language today and into our lives today, just one or two observations is all we have time for, but I want to throw these at you and I want you to think about them. Saul became a problem when he began to make an exception of himself. When he made himself an exception to the rule. And you know that hits every last one of us. There's not a one of us here who at some time or other does not think of ourselves as an exception to the rule. The rule was clear. It was stated both in Deuteronomy and in Leviticus. Get these people out of the country. They'll not be allowed to stay in the country of Israel. Get the mediums and all of them, the wizards, the palm readers, everything. Get them out of the country. They're not going to be a part of our economy. They'll not be here. Saul knew it. He drove them out, and yet he turned right around, and he made an exception to the rule. Do you know why he did that? He appealed to the same thing to which we appeal when we make exceptions to our rules or make ourselves exceptions to rules today. He said, this is an emergency. I don't know whether Hebrew has any participles or not. Does it have any participles? Hebrew? I didn't think you knew. I don't know either. But if it did, there would be two of them there. One of them said when he saw the Philistines' army and when he went to the Lord and asked for guidance. And he saw the size of the Philistines and the Lord didn't answer him. He panicked and took matters into his own hands and became what he called or what he considered an exception. This was an emergency. And we do the same thing. And by making things an emergency, what we're saying is that external circumstances depend or determine how we act. By making things an emergency, we can justify cheating. The emergency is that we're here on a scholarship that demands that we maintain a B average. Now, that's the standard. That's the rule. And the rule also is that you not cheat. But if your part average is shockingly low and it's beginning to drop below the B mark, then the emergency arises and we say, well, this is an exception, and so you cheat in order to keep your grade average up. Well, we justify speeding in the same way, regardless of the 55-mile speed limit. Many of us drive at 65 and 70, just never think about it. We have these electronic gadgets in our car, and we have the things that'll Huh? Busters. Fuzzbusters. How did you know what they were called? Fuzzbusters. And we just go right on making exceptions. And you see, it's not right. It just isn't right. It says that external circumstances justify our actions. For example, the wife denied me sex, so I committed adultery. Yeah, justifies it, you see. Or my boss doesn't pay me enough money, so I steal. Justifying it. And you could name 100 more ways in which we make exceptions for ourselves and think that external circumstances justify immoral conduct. But there's something back behind that even that's more serious. Not that just external circumstances justify our conduct. Back behind the external circumstance idea is this: my internal appraisal of my importance allows me to justify myself as being an exception. Many of us think that the world turns around us. I say many of us. If you're not awfully careful and if you don't make a concerted effort, every last one of us will assume that the world revolves around ourselves. Feelings of superiority cause us to allow ourselves to judge that external circumstances justify our immoral conduct. The world doesn't revolve around you. You know that? You just now learned that the world doesn't really revolve around you. How do you gain your sense of significance? Well, I gain my sense of significance by thinking that the world revolves around me. I got humbled this morning, and I had to remind myself, Woodruff, you've only got about 15 minutes to say what you're going to say. But wait, the world doesn't revolve around me. This assembly doesn't revolve around the preacher. We've got other things that are important. That's important, and the announcements are important, and abuse is important, and everybody else is important, and I'm just one of the cogs in the wheel. It doesn't revolve around me. So what I'm doing, I'm adjusting. At the same time that I'm talking, I'm juggling all this in my head in order to get this thing said. Why? Well, I could get up here and assume that everything revolves around me, you know, and be offended because I didn't have all the time I thought I was going to have. Listen, you don't gain your sense of significance by the world revolving around you or your thinking it does. We gain our sense of significance by being a meaningful, integral part of a high and noble calling with a lot of other people. That's where you get your sense of significance. Of being an integral part with a whole lot of other folks who are just as equally as important as you are, and we're all involved with a high and noble calling. That's where our importance comes. Not that's where our importance comes. Our importance comes from some other thing we'll not discuss right now. Our feelings of importance come from that. Our sense of importance and significance come from being jointly involved with other people in a high and noble calling. Not in feeling like the world revolves around you. But watch this, and it's subtle. This seems to affect leadership more than it does anybody else. Leaders seem somehow or another to feel like they're exempt from the rules they lay down. Why is that? You see, Saul was the one that had driven the wizards out. He's the one that had run them out of the country. Well, surely he's not going to be the first one to break the rule. Yeah, he was. He was the first one to break the rule. Because religious leadership sometimes, or whether it's religious or not, just leadership seems to sometimes think that they're exempt from the same laws they bound on other people. That's what Jesus said to the leaders of his day. He said, they bind heavy burdens on men's shoulders, hard to bear, but they don't do them. They preach, but they don't practice. And the Israelite nation, which should have been a leader in the world in morality, in Romans the 2nd chapter, Paul says, the name of God is blasphemed among the world because of you. He said, you that teach others, don't you teach yourself? You that preach that a person shouldn't commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You that say that somebody shouldn't steal, do you steal? He said, in effect, shame on you for being in the position of leadership and not taking the lead in what's right. So really, the first thing that I'd like to say is quit making yourself an exception to the rule. And that's just about as good advice I can give to begin this year. And if you'll allow me these couple of close shots at you again, we're going to back off and get some faraway shots later on. But quit making yourself an exception to the rule. When I was in school, I think I made myself an exception to the rule. If I had ever learned that I shouldn't do it, I think I'd have been a whole lot better off. In fact, I know I would have been. I used to come in late, you know, and I'd always have an excuse. Why, Woodruff, are you not here on time to sign in at 10:30? And there I'd go. What's your excuse for not getting in on time? We've all got one, and we all think that we're the exception to the rule, and it's all because of the fact that we think everything centers around us. Now watch. This whole thing is involved in another determination that we will not allow ourselves a privilege that we will not grant to other people. You ought to take that as a vow and make it as a rule in your own life. Don't act in such a way but what you could grant that same privilege to other people without causing total chaos. Immanuel Kant said, so act that you can will the principle of your act to be law universal. In 1970, my sons and my wife and I were over in the Holy Land. We went to Magdala by the Sea of Galilee. There was a mosaic there on the ground, on the floor of this shrine. It wasn't in very good repair. There had been some pieces fallen out of it or taken out of it. And our boys, they wanted to pluck a little piece of that, about an inch square. They wanted to get that out of there and take it as a souvenir. And they did it. You know how they did it or how they wanted to do it? They said, Daddy, it's just one piece. Nobody ever missed it. It's just one piece. I said, listen, men, what if everybody that came and looked at this mosaic took that attitude? It's just one piece. I said, do you realize how long this thing would last? Wouldn't last long at all. I think they learned a lesson. Don't do anything that you couldn't grant the same privilege to other people without it causing total chaos. Listen, can you imagine the chaos that would result in this assembly if everybody arrived 5 minutes late like about 100 of you do? Can you imagine the chaos in the assembly? Nobody would have heard those 15 minutes of announcements this morning. Can you imagine the traffic jam that would happen out here, people trying to park if everybody came 5 minutes late? Or if everybody came exactly on time. You know, you cut it so thin that you don't have about 5 seconds, you come busted in and you sit down and you go, and then they say, and now our announcement, welcome to the... What if everybody... You couldn't hear for all the panting. Well, what right do you have to do that then? And look, when I point to you, I'm pointing 3 fingers at me because I have a tendency, when I'm not here preaching or something, I get here plenty of time. I get up at 5 o'clock on Sunday morning. I'm here by 6:30. Yeah, but that's something else. What happens when I'm listening? I usually arrive there about 30 seconds before time to start. And that's not right. And I'm going to quit it. I'm going to stop doing it. Okay, now... That's my confession. What's yours? I hope you'll quit doing it. The elders are concerned about it because a bunch of you come rushing in like a herd of bison and you sit over there. And if everybody did that, it'd just be total chaos. Galatians 5:19 and 20 and Galatians 5:22 and 23 are 2 verses I want just to pass on to you as we close. One of them is, well, it's a kind of food. Look at it as a feast the world presents. And these are, this is a table we're going to spread. Everybody's going to spread this table. Everybody's bringing some kind of food. We've all been invited to a potluck. Okay, you've got 2 choices. You can either bring what's in 19 and 20, and that involves immorality, impurity, licentiousness, idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, anger, selfishness, dissension, party spirit, envy, drunkenness, carousing, and the like. You can either bring that, or you can bring that which is in 22 and 23. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such there's no law. You can bring that. So here we come with our covered dish. And that's the way we usually come. We come with it covered. What are you bringing to life's feast? Nobody would want to sit down at a table supplied with what's in 19 and 20. You wouldn't. You wouldn't want to sit down to that slop. And yet, if you're not careful, while you want to eat the other that's in 22 and 23, here you come with your covered dish and you slide it on the table and you walk on over here and get something else. Don't do that. You don't have the right to do that as a Christian. Look, no Christian has a right to be a part of the problem of the world. He only has a right to be a part of the answer. We're called to be answers, not problems. Oh, you say, yeah, but... I understand that, but the problem is so big. Man, if you knew the problem with drugs, if you knew the problem with cheating, or the problem with immorality, the problem is so big. What am I? I'm just one. Let me urge you something. Never underestimate the power of a single good example. Coming out of the library yesterday or day before, on Friday, I saw this girl with this handbag over her shoulder, and it had on there, printed out in bold white print, "Never underestimate the power of a woman." And I say amen to that. For both good and bad. It's not just good. Good and bad. The power of a woman is tremendous. But I want you to underline and circle another word. Never underestimate the power of a woman. One woman or one person. There was an atheist speaking one place, and he had a large audience of people, and he was speaking out against Jesus Christ, and he was ridiculing God. And the story goes that as he waxed into his lesson and warmed up to it and began to just make such assertions against God and to blaspheme, nobody said a word. But there was a little 16-year-old girl back here, and she just simply stood up while he was talking. And she began to sing, stand up for Jesus. And everybody turned around and nobody stood up. But she just kept singing. And then here would one pop up and joined her. Another popped up and joined her. And here came another and stood up. And then five or six began to stand and 10 or 12 until finally about the whole assembly stood up and was singing, stand up for Jesus. Just one little voice, a tiny little old 16-year-old girl. Don't ever underestimate the power of a single example for good. And you may think the power of the problem is too great. Don't worry about it. Just do what you can from where you are. Take care of your little quarter of an acre and let the world follow if it wants to. But God will give you the power to influence other people. That's why Joshua, when he said, I don't know about you, but it's for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And it says in the last verse of that 31st verse, so all Israel served Jehovah during the life of Joshua. That'll happen in your life, too. Okay, we're not going to review. You've had your chance, if you didn't get it, that you ought to be a part of the answer rather than the problem. We'll be talking about it specifically later on. Let's encourage one another, though, and be that good example. And let's have a good year together. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to learn a lot, and we're going to do it together. And let's encourage one another right now. You may need to respond for some reason to place membership here with this church. You may want to become a Christian and become a part of the answer now. You may want to correct your life as a Christian and respond, whatever may be your need. We're going to encourage you while we stand and sing.